What you're about to listen to is just a glimpse of what takes place on the weekend. We'd love for you to join us at one of our three locations, Fairfax, Clarksburg, Maryland, or online. For weekend experience information, go to fairfax.cc or download the Fairfax app. We hope you enjoy the sermon.
Give the Lord praise offering. All right, you can have a seat. You can have a seat. All right. So welcome those who are watching online. Welcome to those who are out in the great room. All of you here in the sanctuary, we're so glad that you're with us today. I got a text right before I came in. We've got some of our folks that are in Austria that are watching today. And we have like the gathered church and the distributed church. And through our online ministry, we have folks that are watching from just all over, and we really do want to welcome you. We're glad that you're here. Would you guys that are here just... All right, I just want to say one thing. I've been talking all month about kind of this be a hero to a kid, and we're trying to engage our congregation to just kind of go above and beyond during this summer. Your regular tithes and offerings and help us to finish out our project here, 36,000 square feet, next generation space for kids and youth, and we're so excited about what God is going to do. And so here's what we're, you know, we took the 36,000 and 1.7 million we have to raise this summer and came out with like $50 a square foot. Here's what we're going to do on this Friday. This is the last day of June. Is we're just calling it Be a Hero Day, and we're hoping and praying that every single person who calls this place home and is connected with Fairfax will do something on June 30th on kind of Be a Hero Day to help us finish out phase two. And maybe it's 1 square foot or 10 square feet or 100 square feet or whatever it is, but that you'll do something. And my prayer is that, I mean, I'd love for everyone who's a part of the congregation to be a part of that. My goal kind of is that we would have at least 1,000 that would engage on Friday, specifically on Friday, sometime between the morning and the evening on Friday, and just see how that kind of moves us closer to that goal. And so we'd ask that you'd be praying about that. Pray with us this week as we kind of go into Be a Hero Day. And you can give in a lot of different ways. You can give online. You can give through our app. You can give with text to give 77977 and just the amount that you want to give, and whatever way that that God leads you to do that. But this Friday, kind of Be a Hero Day, let's see what just what God can do to like move us closer to finishing out that building. All right, this is the last week of our At the Movie series, and as we talk about every week, the reason we do this, and I know we have some folks here that's like, it's your first time, and I met some folks, it was their first time here at the 9:30 service, and, oh, it's interesting that you do the At the Movie series, and the reason is because we really are convinced that if you tell a story, a good story, that whether you have connected all the dots of the gospel yourself, that the gospel themes will emerge from that. You just can't help to see that happen. And so we always have a good time looking at the gospel themes in movies. And this summer we've been looking at these kind of comic book hero movies and talking about what does it mean to live the heroic life that God's created us to live, and what are the things that keep us from doing that. And this week we're looking at, as we wrap this up, we're looking at the movie Captain America: Civil War. How many of you have seen that movie? Let me just see your hands. A lot of you have seen that. How many of you have seen like any Avenger movie? It's just like you've seen an Avenger movie. So here's the thing about this movie. This is a total ensemble movie, you know, and you know what an ensemble movie is, where they just like get a bunch of like folks together, a bunch of famous folks together, and try to get as many as they can really in the movie. And I think that they actually sat around and said, how can we get as many superheroes as possible, like into one movie, and then like we'll do it and we'll build a plot around it, right? Because they just wanted to get as many as possible, because there are a ton of superheroes here. There's Captain America, there's Bucky Barnes, there's Iron Man, who's played by Robert Downey Jr., which means it's an awesome movie because I love Robert Downey Jr. There's Hawkeye, who's played by Jeremy Renner. There's Black Widow, who's played by Scarlett Johansson. There's Ant-Man, that we talked about Ant-Man last week, and like he is in this movie, and it's played by Paul Rudd, and he's the funnier and goofier cat than ever. Spider-Man, War Machine, Scarlet Witch, Vision, Falcon, Black Panther. There's like, that's 12 right there. It's like, it's a biblical movie. It's like the disciples, right? There's like, it's like 12 superheroes there, and I probably missed some. And the basic plot line is this. It is not complicated. The basic plot line is just this. Everybody's ticked off in this movie. Like, if you get that, you get this movie. Everybody is angry in this movie. Lot of anger in this movie. Black Panther is angry at Bucky Barnes because he thinks he blew up a building that his dad was in and killed his dad, and so he's angry at him. Iron Man is angry at Bucky Barnes because he eventually finds out that he really did kill his parents, and so he's angry at him for that, but it was while he was brainwashed, and so, like, does that count or not? And Iron Man is angry at Captain America because he's protecting Bucky. Lot of anger in this movie. A number of the Avengers, like half of the Avengers in the movie, are angry at the State Department. How can you not be angry at the State Department, right? Like, of course, we have a lot of people in our church that work at the State Department, and then we have a lot that say they work at the State Department, you know, and like they're the ones who are packing it in the back. Anyway, so they're angry at the State Department because the State Department wants to control the Avengers and kind of endorse everything that they do, or basically operate under the supervision of the State Department, because there's been some things that have happened, you know, when the Avengers have gotten into action that have not been so good. And then so you have a group of Avengers that are angry at the government for that. What a novel idea, be angry at the government. And then they're angry at the government, and the rest of the Avengers are angry at the Avengers who are angry at the government. And so some are working outside the law and some are working inside the law and all of that. And then a guy called Zemo is angry at all the Avengers because he feels like they've ruined his life, that he's lost some family members and they didn't take action, or it was because of their action that their lives were lost. And now he's doing everything he can to actually get them to destroy each other, because he knows he's not powerful enough to destroy them, and so he knows the only way he can destroy them is if they turn on each other and they destroy each other. And so he does a bunch of things in the movie that kind of turn them against each other, and that's where you come up with this whole idea of Captain America Civil War. It's the Avengers that are in civil war against each other, and it's this guy Zemo that's kind of set that whole thing up. Now, the scene I'm about to show you is this incredible fight scene between all of the Avengers. And it's like, this is like the part of the movie that my wife likes the best. Like, my wife, yeah, you've heard me say this before, is that, like, Donna, she goes to the movie and it's like, yeah, get through the whole plot, the whole character development stuff, fine, when do they start shooting? And that's like, that's always like the question, when did the guns come out and they start shooting? And so this is like awesome for that, because it's just a lot of like action and all that. It's a longer clip. And I want to just, for some of you that like will get nervous because it's a longer clip and then I'll talk and like you know how these movie series works. And I just want you to know there's only two clips. First was a little longer, second was a little shorter. And so don't worry, we'll kind of get it all in today. But there's this longer clip, and it's probably the most superheroes you will ever see in one scene. And it's awesome. It's totally gratuitous in terms of violence. Okay, I just want to say that up front, but it's just like awesome because you see all of the Avengers, then you kind of see them finally take the sides and who's on what side and all of that. Now, as usual, there are a couple of words in these scenes that you usually don't hear in church, okay? So I just want to tell you that you might hear them if you were in some of the homes of folks who were getting ready for church, okay? So I'm just saying, okay? So like people like they go, oh, I'm so offended they heard that in church, you know, but then they drop it back home. It's just like, so maybe you'll hear a couple that maybe we're saying coming to church, but usually you don't hear in church. And okay, so take a look at this clip. All right, that's awesome. For those of you who are going, wow, that's great. Like, where does it go from there? It just keeps doing that, okay? Like, that's the whole movie, basically. Lot of fighting, lot of anger in this movie. Everyone has been hurt by someone, something, and they're all consumed by the anger that creates, and they're trying to right that wrong and get back at the person who has hurt them, and so there's just anger upon anger upon anger. Now, all of us deal with that. All of us deal with anger. All of us, in fact, have been hurt and disappointed by every relationship that we've ever been in. When I say every relationship, that's what I mean. I don't mean that we've just been hurt and disappointed by some relationships, or we occasionally get hurt and disappointed. Just because we live this side of heaven, we live in this broken, sinful world, all of us have been hurt and disappointed by every relationship that we're in. That every relationship that we're in, even the awesome relationships, even the greatest relationships, those people at times will disappoint us, at times they will hurt us, at times they will not be the person that we need. That's what it means to live this side of heaven. That's what it means to live in this broken, sinful world. And the result of that hurt and the result of that disappointment is that we get angry. And we live in this shockingly, like, angry culture. Anger is everywhere. Not only do you see it in this incredible amount of relational brokenness in the world, incredible amount of violence in our world, you see it in more subtle ways as well. There's what some have called a low-burn cynicism of irritation in our culture that just kind of constantly surrounds us, so much so that small things like being cut off at the highway or having someone get in front of us at the line can cause people just to go into a rage. Let me just ask you a question. You don't have to raise your hand. You don't have to just, how long do you have to go back to find the last time that you were angry about something? Do you have to go back a month? Do you have to go back a week? Do you have to go back a day? Maybe do you have to go back to your drive-in today? Like, yeah, people are like raising their hands, like, and some are pointing. So anyway, how far do you, like for me, I only have to go back to Friday, right? To Friday, which means that Saturday was a good day for me because usually I could go back to just the day before. But on Friday, you know, Friday, I was coming back from Wichita. We took our staff out to our convention that was connected to the Church of God and the little tribe that we're a part of. And I'm coming back on Friday, and I get into Chicago, and the rest of our team had a horrible, horrible time flying through O'Hare. We were in different groups, and I got on an earlier plane, and they got on another plane, and it was so late that they missed their connecting flight, and then they had to stay all night, and then it was awful. It was just terrible. For me, it wasn't that bad, but still, there was like some irritations that were a part of it, and one of the irritations is that when I got into O'Hare, my flight had been delayed and delayed and delayed, and I was supposed to get home at like 10 o'clock, and I got home at like 1 a.m., and so that was already kind of, you know, not, it was just kind of working on me a little bit. And then they have this thing, you know, like with the airlines, right, where when you get ready to get on the plane, where they have the lines that you get in, and like the lines are marked, like line one, boarding two, boarding three, boarding four, boarding five. And it shouldn't matter, really. It should not matter to any of us which one of those lines that we are in. Because it's just, all it means is like you get on the plane for like 2 minutes early. That's all that means. And I know that we go, oh, well, you want to get on early because you want to be able to put your overhead stuff and all that stuff. But they'll somehow figure that out. It just means you get there, but it does matter. Like it matters which line you're in. And not only matters which line you're in, it matters like how close to the front you are of that line. Because that means you're going to get in again just a few seconds earlier than the person before. Which means that you'll get to sit on the plane a few seconds more than everyone else. And so I usually am like in line two, and everyone actually now is in line two because that if you have a credit card connected to the airline, then that's the line that you get in. And so there's like, you know, a certain number of people in one and three and four and five, and then there's like 100 people in line two. And I'm usually in line two, but for some reason, I got in line one. For this one, it was like line one. I said, oh, I matter. Like, I am important. And it's like awesome. And so I said, okay, not only am I going to be in line one, I'm going to be up near the front in line one. Because that means I'll be like one of the first people on the plane. And so I get to line one like 20 minutes before we're actually going to board. So I can be in the front of line one. And I get there, and there's always somebody in front of me, you know. So it's like, okay, I'm going to be the second person on the plane, you know. It's like, for some reason, it's like, that's awesome that I'll be the second person on the plane. So I stand there for like 20 minutes and watch as everything kind of lines up. And then they get to the point where they're boarding people on the plane. And, you know, all the special circumstances and the people with kids and all that, they do all of that stuff first, which is awesome. And now they're ready for like line one. And it's like, this is my moment. Like, this is what I've been waiting for. Like, line one, second person. It doesn't get any better than that. And then, like, out of the blue, I don't know where she came from. Like, I never saw her. But out of the blue, this woman walks up at the front of line one, hands her ticket to the, like, ticket agent, and they don't ask any questions. Like the police don't come. The pilot doesn't come out and say, no, you weren't in line for line one. They just take her ticket and they scan it, and she walks on ahead of me. And it's like I'm thinking, where's the justice in this? Like, where is God in this? Is there a God? I mean, like, how could there be a God in this happen, you know? And there was this, like, am I proud of this? No, I am not proud of this. But there is this, like, anger that is starting to, like, boy, like, that's not right. That's not fair, you know? And when I got on the plane, I was tempted to, like, walk by your seat, you know? And I saw you, you know? And so it's just like, and I mean, no huge deal, but right? But it's like it taps in to this kind of low anger that is just kind of there, I think, in our culture. Now, a lot of people think that if you're a follower of Jesus, if you're a good Christian, if you're a follower of Jesus, that it means not getting angry. Maybe you grew up in a church that was what kind of came across, that if you're a follower of Jesus, you just don't get angry. Or maybe you grew up in a home that kind of gave that impression that just as Christians, we just don't get angry. If you grew up in a church like that, or you grew up in a home like that, then here's the deal, is that you will become really, really good at suppressing your anger. You'll become really good at denying your anger. You'll become really good at hiding your anger. The anger's still there, but you won't express it, at least not in certain settings. Sometimes we even use other words because we feel like, as Christians, like, we shouldn't get angry, so we use other words to describe our emotions so we don't have to admit that we're actually dealing with feelings of anger. So we say, instead of saying, I'm angry, we say, well, I'm concerned. Are you angry? No, I'm just concerned. It's just like, I'm concerned. I mean, I wouldn't be angry. That Christian doesn't get angry, but like, I'm concerned by what you're doing at this moment, you know, or I'm worried, or I'm fraught, or I'm depressed, or I'm hurt, or whatever it is. Like, we use other words because we don't want to admit that we're actually dealing with anger. Worse than all of that, worse than suppressing your anger, hiding your anger, or using other words to describe your anger, is sometimes we just run from our anger. We avoid putting ourselves in circumstances or a situation where we might feel angry. So if something makes you feel angry, you just distance yourself from it. You just get as far away from it as you can. You get out of there as fast as you can. So if your job makes you angry, or your boss makes you angry, you just quit. Or if your husband makes you angry, or your wife makes you angry, you bail. Maybe you bail for a day. Maybe you bail completely. If your parents make you angry, or your adult kids make you angry, then you just distance yourself from your parents, or you distance yourself from your adult kids. So we just kind of do whatever we can to not put ourselves in a situation where we're angry. Now, perhaps the clearest, most definitive thing that Paul has to say about anger is actually one of the shortest things that he has to say about it. It's in Ephesians 4, and here's what he just says: be angry and sin not. That's it. Be angry and sin not. Now, notice he doesn't say, if you get angry, don't sin. He doesn't even say, when you get angry, don't sin. Paul says, be angry. In other words, Paul's implying that there are at times, there are times when absolutely it is your duty to get angry. The Bible's really clear about the fact that anger is not something that's like wrong in and of itself. It can be perverted, but it's not wrong in and of itself. In fact, Jesus got angry. Now, whenever we talk about Jesus getting angry, our default is always talk about when he went into the temple and he threw out the money changers. Then we look at that and go, oh, see, Jesus got angry. And we treat that story as if that is an anomaly. Like, that's like the one time where Jesus got angry. But when you read the biblical narrative, you see that Jesus got angry all the time. You see throughout the New Testament narrative that Jesus got angry at things. And one of the times we see Jesus getting angry is in Mark 3. The Pharisees are following Jesus like they oftentimes were. They're trying to catch him doing something that was wrong. They actually want to see if he's going to heal someone on the Sabbath. It's the Sabbath, because in their minds, healing someone on the Sabbath would be violating the law. They want to catch him violating the law. And this is what we're told We're told that he looked around at them in anger and deeply distressed at their stubborn heart, said to the man, stretch out your hand. This was the man who had a disability in his hand. He says, stretch out your hand. And he stretched it out, and his hand was completely and totally restored. Now, why was Jesus angry? Well, he's angry because the Pharisees are taking the law, that which is good. You know, keep in mind that because we talk negatively about like legalism and what the Pharisees did with the law, that sometimes we forget that the law itself was good. Jesus said the law is good. Paul said that the law is good. And what the Pharisees were doing is they were taking something that was good, they were taking the law, and they were twisting the law into an instrument of fear. They were twisting the law into an instrument of self-righteousness. So in response, Jesus gets angry. And the result of that anger is the complete and total restoration of this man's hand. That's the same kind of anger that Paul's talking about in Romans 1 when he says the wrath or anger of God, the wrath of God, the anger of God is being revealed from heaven against all of the godlessness and wickedness of men who suppress the truth by their wickedness. Now, the Bible is filled with passages of Scripture that talk about God's anger. Like, do a search on that and see how many times the Bible talks about the fact that God gets angry. Now, sometimes we read those passages, especially those in the Old Testament, and we think that God's wrath, his anger, is kind of an embarrassing characteristic of God. That the God of the Old Testament, we have this idea that the God of the Old Testament was like this angry God, and then like Jesus came along and helped God handle his, get rid of his anger issues. And like, so you have the God of the Old Testament, he's an angry God. I don't even want to read those Old Testament passages. That's the angry God. And then the God of the New Testament, that's a loving God. And he got rid of his anger problems finally after all these years. He got rid of his anger problems. And now he's like this loving God. And so we treat it as some characteristic, some unpleasant characteristic of God that he gets angry. But God's anger is a holy and a righteous anger. God's anger is actually focused on injustice. It's focused on evil. His anger is focused on anything that results in his children being abused or enslaved or controlled, anything that would keep them from living the kind of life that he has created them to live. You want a God who gets angry. You want a God who gets angry. It means that God is not just sitting in heaven passively watching the brokenness of this world unfold. Think about a parent. Think about a parent watching as their child is abused, or watching as their child is taken advantage of, or watching as their child is treated unjustly, and the emotion of anger not rising within their soul. I mean, the very nature of love is that when you see those who you love who are being treated unjustly, when you see those who you love that are being treated and abused in ways that are hurt, it brings about anger. Anger is a gift from the Lord. The result of the cross is the cross of Jesus Christ is the result of anger. God's anger is actually the hope of the universe. Let me say that again. God's anger is the hope of the universe. God's anger is the fullest expression of his love for us. The cross of Jesus Christ is the result of his anger. And we're called to have that same kind of righteous, holy anger. Anger is the emotional. Here, anger is the emotional capacity to be roused to action by the sight of evil. Let me say it again. Anger is the emotional capacity to be roused to action, to do something at the sight of evil. The emotion of anger is a gift of God. It's part of being created in the image of God. There are situations where it would be absolutely wrong not to be angry. But Paul says, be angry and sin not. Now, why does he connect those two things? Why does he connect sin and anger. He connects them because it's very easy to sin if you are angry. That's why Paul doesn't have to say, be joyful and sin not. That's why he doesn't have to say, be cheerful, but sin not. Like, because joyfulness doesn't tend to lead to sin. Cheerfulness doesn't tend to lead to sin. Happiness doesn't tend to lead to sin. But anger can easily lead to sin. It can lead to civil war. Anger is destructive energy. Now, we hear the word destructive, and the first thing we think about is that it's bad, that something that's destructive is bad, but that's not true. Anger is destructive energy. It's destructive energy designed by God to be released in defense of something that is good. Anger has to be destructive if it's going to destroy injustice. Anger has to be destructive if it's going to destroy evil. Anger has to be destructive if it's going to destroy the things that keep us from living the kind of life that God has created us to live. But if that righteous, holy anger gets perverted, what happens is it gets turned away from destroying injustice and destroying evil, and it becomes a sinful anger that destroys people. And that's why Paul says, be angry, but sin not. Most of the violence in the world is the result of sinful anger. Most of the destructive words that tear down people's self-esteem and their self-image and that hurt people and cause wounds within people are the result of sinful anger. Most marriages are destroyed by sinful anger. Relationships are destroyed by sinful anger. If anger is released in the wrong way, it's one of the most painful, life-destroying things in the world. Now, near the end of the movie, everyone finally starts to realize that. It takes the whole movie for them to get there. But finally, by the end of the movie, they start realizing that, wow, we've been so consumed by anger, and it's accomplished nothing. The only thing that all of this anger has accomplished is to bring more pain than we've already experienced. It was the pain. See, that's the problem, is that it's this vicious cycle that happens with anger when it becomes sinful anger and becomes perverted, is that it's this pain that results in anger, and when we become consumed by the anger, all that does is lead to more pain, which just leads to more anger, which just leads to more pain, which just leads to more anger. And near the end of the movie, they start to realize, they don't all fully realize it, but they start to realize, wow, we are in this kind of vicious cycle here where our anger, the fact that we are consumed by our anger, this is just destroying us. And this scene, I'm going to show you, it begins with this encounter between Black Panther and Zemo. Black Panther is the one whose father was killed by Zemo, and they have this kind of encounter, and you think it's going to go one way, And then you think it's even going to go another way, and it finally turns, and you kind of see this realization that begins to happen on what happens when we get consumed by anger. Take a look. Powerful about that scene is just this visualization of what happens. Here's what happens when we get consumed by anger. It just leaves us bloodied and battered, and it doesn't matter that someone else is hurt. It doesn't matter that maybe we've been able to get some kind of satisfaction, is that someone else is experiencing pain beside us. It just leaves everyone. It leaves all the combatants bloodied and battered. And if not physically and that kind of thing, most often just emotionally and spiritually just bloodied and battered. So how do we make sure that we are not consumed by anger? Well, no easy formula, but Paul talks about some things that if we practice them, at least it moves us in the right direction. One of those things is found in the second half of verse 26, where he says, do not let the sun go down while you are still angry. Do not let the sun go down while you are still angry. Now, in the early part of our marriage, Don and I took that very, very literally. We tried to settle all of our disagreements, all of our fights, all of our anger, all the things that we were dealing with before we went to bed, which meant that we had some of our worst fights at night trying to get all of that stuff done because the Bible says we got to get it done. Like, if we don't get it done before we go to sleep, we'll go to hell. Like, we got to get this done. And it just led to some really, really not healthy conversations. And then we begin to understand, well, maybe what Paul is saying is that it doesn't have to actually happen like before we go to sleep. Maybe what he's saying is don't postpone this stuff. Don't procrastinate this stuff. That when we're dealing with anger, don't ignore it. Don't bury the hurt. Don't pretend like it didn't happen. Don't let the list keep getting longer and longer and longer. Address it. Talk about it. Process it. Get it out there. Make sure that you've been honest, that you speak the truth in love, that all of that is being done and it's not being pushed back further and further and further and further. Because the longer you push it back and the further you have to go back in history to deal with that issue or what was said or what was done, the less it becomes about that issue and the more it becomes about an overall pattern that you really cannot address. Like, overall patterns, you need to deal with issues as they arise. And that's what Paul is saying. It's like, as you deal with these issues of anger, don't procrastinate, don't put it off. Have those difficult conversations, process it, and seek forgiveness if forgiveness is needed, which is the other thing that Paul talks about in Colossians 3, where he says, bear with each other, forgive what grievances you may have against one another. Forgive as the Lord forgave you. Now, here's the thing about forgiveness, and we could spend, obviously, whole sermon, a whole series, a whole year talking about this. But I just want to say this. Forgiveness is almost always extended. It's almost always offered before it's felt. In other words, you don't have to feel forgiving in order to forgive. In fact, forgiveness really has nothing to do with feelings. Like, that's the problem sometimes when we think about forgiveness, is that we think that forgiveness is a feeling that we finally get to, and when we get to the feeling of forgiveness, and then we extend forgiveness. In fact, we flip forgiveness and anger and what they are. We treat anger like it's a an action, like it's something that's wrong, and the Bible says no. Anger is an emotion. It's something that God has given you. It's neither good nor bad. It's just there. It's a feeling. It just is what it is. Yes, it can be misused. Yes, it can be used in righteous ways and unrighteous ways, but it's a feeling. You can't necessarily control the feeling of anger. But forgiveness is not a feeling. Forgiveness is an act. Forgiveness is about making the intentional decision that you are no longer going to bring the matter, whatever the matter up, you're no longer going to bring that matter up, not to yourself, not to the other person. Forgiveness is about making the intentional decision to bear the pain that has been caused by the angry word or the angry action or whatever it is that was done. It's the willingness, it's the intentional decision to say, I will bear the pain for the angry word or for the angry action, so that we can take that pain and put it in the past. It's the intentional decision to bear the pain so that we can take that pain and put it in the past. And if you make the intentional decision to grant forgiveness, if you make the intentional decision to bear the pain, then the feelings of anger over time, over time, will begin to slip away. See, sometimes we experience hurt, we experience pain because of something that was done in anger, something that was said in anger. And we think we have offered or expressed forgiveness, but the anger doesn't immediately go away, and we wonder if we've really forgiven them. But forgiveness is not a feeling. Forgiveness is the intentional act to bear the pain. And the feelings of anger may linger for a while. Sometimes, depending upon that which was done or that which was said, sometimes those feelings of anger might subside very quickly after you extend forgiveness. Sometimes those feelings of anger may last for quite a while. That's not really something you can control. That's not really something that should cause you to wonder if you've extended forgiveness. That's not something that should cause the other person to say, well, you haven't really forgiven me because you still feel some feelings of anger. No, no. Forgiveness is the intentional decision to bear the pain. The feelings of anger will slip away over time. But they'll never begin to slip away until you make the intentional decision to forgive. Now, it's possible to not offer forgiveness. I mean, people make the intentional decision not to forgive all the time. Maybe you've experienced some hurt. Maybe someone has said something in anger to you or does something anger to you, and you have experienced that hurt, and you're struggling with whether you are willing to bear the pain and take that on. So it's possible not to forgive those who have hurt us, but it's impossible to do it within the shadow of the cross. Because on the cross, Jesus bore the pain for your failure. On the cross, Jesus bore the pain for your sin. So you can't stand in the shadow of the cross and not be set free. It's just impossible. You can't stand in the shadow of the cross and not be set free to extend the same grace that you have experienced to someone else. You can't stand in the shadow of the cross and not be set free from being consumed by anger. You can't stand in the shadow of the cross and not be set free from to extend forgiveness. Now, as a pastor, I'm usually not in the role of saying, like, how can I keep from forgiving someone? But let me answer that question. The way that you can keep from forgiving someone is to get as far away from that as you possibly can. Distance yourself as much as you can from the cross. Because when you stand in the shadow of the cross, when you stand in the shadow of a God who loves you so much that he bore the pain for your failures, it'll set you free. So what are you maybe being consumed by right now? Maybe it's anger, maybe it's not anger, maybe it's something completely different. What are you being consumed by right now that you just need to get set free from that? And maybe for some of you, it's like your past. I mean, like for those of you who are saying, like, what does it mean to come into a relationship with Jesus Christ? That's what it means to come into that relationship, is to say, I want to get set free from my past. And the only way that you can get set free from your past is to allow what Jesus Christ did on the cross when he bore your pain for your failures, to allow him to do that. So today as we pray and today as we sing, I just encourage you just to respond to God's Holy Spirit. I know that God's Spirit is at work in this place. He's been at work all weekend. I know that there are things that we find ourselves consumed by that only the cross will set us free from. And so make your way to the cross. Just as kind of a visible act, perhaps, just to make your way to the cross and just to say, I'm free. I am free. I no longer want to be consumed by this. I no longer want to be enslaved by this. I no longer want to be controlled by this. And for some of you, it may be like, I'm free. And like, I mean, I'm free from my past. I've decided to follow Jesus. And if that's your decision today, write your name on that. Let us know. Let us pray.